From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As the U.S. corporate media beats the drum that Russian propaganda is threatening American democracy and American values, some inside Russian media are having a conversation about the hysteria in the United States. Peter Lavelle is regularly featured here at CPR, and he hosts the flagship program Crosstalk for the Russian television network RT. Two of his guests are also regular contributors here, Mark Sloboda, an American who lives in Moscow and lectures at Moscow State University on international relations, and Dmitry Babich, who's a journalist with Sputnik News Agency. They were joined by policy analyst Peter Olyevich in this edition of Crosstalk, which we bring you special today.
I want to talk about something that's really important that I don't think anybody else in the media, at least on television, is talking about. We know that Trump begrudgingly signed the sanctions against Russia, North Korea, and Iran, which we'll discuss further. But also part of it was an element called Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act. What is that, Mark? What does it mean? And at the tail end, talk about what this Hamilton 68 is.
Okay, so this Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act is the final version of this bill that was put forward. As originally, it was meant to sanction North Korea for the missile program and an additional. Then the Senate tacked onto it some sanctions against Russia, went to the House, they changed it around, and now it's targeting Iran, North Korea, Russia, Syria, awesome. And de facto the European Union and companies, anything that does business with Russia.
But this is the media element.
This is the media element. It is another feckless sanctions bill. It affects on the foreign policies of any of the countries will have no effect other than to punish, right, to do something. And as we saw from the effects of the years of sanctions on Russia, that according to the U.S. government's own assessment, trimmed less than 1% off Russia's GDP.
But let's talk about this media element. I mean, they're targeting this television station that you're on right now. It's Sputnik here, essentially saying, if I go to Victor, we'll go back to Hamilton 16 is saying, I mean, this is essentially saying that foreign broadcasters do not have First Amendment speech rights. And this has not been tested legally here.
But they're
targeting certain media outlets and denying them freedom of speech.
And this says a lot about the totalitarian nature of the current American information sphere, where we see that the American elites are scared, are afraid that the American people are going to have access to alternative points of view. So whether it's RT, whether it's Sputnik, whether it's Chinese, Iranian, CGTV. Or any other
they want to keep the monopoly. That's what they want.
They want to keep the monopoly.
Or an American station.
I would go back to the Cold War years. And actually, in the 70s, some California stations had broadcast by Russian, by Soviet hosts, like Vladimir Pozner, who is quite a liberal these days. And there were no problems with that. But why are there problems today? Because they see that RT, Sputnik, other broadcasters actually have great audiences, especially in large American cities.
And particularly on YouTube.
On YouTube, but also especially interesting for American intellectual sphere, right? People who from all walks of life, who suddenly see that the information they're getting from CNN or from MSNBC or ABC or CBS.
It's junk.
It's not just junk. That's propaganda.
That is propaganda.
This is something they're scared of, that the American people are going to see the truth.
If I can speak on behalf of all of us, they should be afraid. Go ahead.
Well, I should note that actually the money spent on what they call countering Russian propaganda was initially earmarked for countering the so-called Islamic State. So it's a part of this very strange schizophrenia, presenting the real danger as an unreal one and fighting a bogus threat, namely Russia. And please note, you know, the sanctions are targeting North Korea, Iran, and Russia, which is like ragtag and bobtail. Three completely different regimes.
It's really potpourri, isn't it? It's really just kind of...
Three completely different regimes. But the problem is that now, in order to remove these sanctions, you need to change the legislation. Let me remind you that the Jackson-Vanik Amendment stayed for 40 years, you know, even when...
And the Jackson-Vanik Amendment was about Jewish immigration during the Soviet Union.
Yeah, freedom of Jewish immigration. Jews could emigrate freely since 1989. But the amendment stayed for 25 years longer.
All right, let's talk about this Hamilton 68. It's very important. Give it a shot.
Okay, so this Hamilton 68 is at heart, it is a retread of an online project called Proper Not, Propaganda or Not, that was promoted by the Washington Post and that purported to track Russian propaganda on social media and anything that echoed Russian talking points, which ended up attacking everything on the right or the left of the alternative media that ever criticized U.S. foreign policy, that ever in any way agreed with anything that Russia at any time said was Russian propaganda. The Washington Post was forced to, in a humiliatingly
step back.
But the exact same B-grade neocon jokers behind Proper Not. Now, they were officially anonymous at that time, the originators, but the list was public. But anyone who was following along...
Who was
actually behind it. The same people, we're talking Clint Watts from the Daily Beast, Andrew Aaron Weisbird, who is an arch-Zionist just until a few years ago, a basement troll, obsessively watching anyone who had anything positive to say about Russia on the internet and imagining grand KGB-controlled conspiracies, linking them together, all these pretty graphs and everything.
Pretty awful.
Well, they're back again in a new iteration, this time funded by the German Marshall Fund, a serious Atlanticist think tank and policy project.
What it seems to me is that with this operation is, I'm glad you brought up the German Marshall Fund, because this sounds like a new Stasi operation, okay? I mean, tracking people on Twitter, we don't know. They don't tell us who they're going to track. I mean, it's very... You know, this is a waste of money, but it sounds very ominous.
Well, coming back to what Mark just said about the Marshall Fund, of course, it's called the German Marshall Fund, but we all know where the money comes from, and it's not really so German. It's much more American. And the purpose, one of the purposes of the Marshall organization is to keep Germany obedient, subservient to Washington's interests, which it does quite effectively. Among other things. But and that tells you who is behind those Proper Not and other initiatives. And the American taxpayer, essentially, is paying to not be able, to not have access to alternative points of view. So it's almost, think about it this way. The American taxpayers are paying that they would not be able to hear the truth about the state of the country in the U.S. And that's an especially egregious sort of disposition of their funds.
It shows a mindset here. I mean, again, you know, they don't want their monopoly broken.
Of course.
They want to make sure the party line is towed here. It's really amazing how I keep having to have to fall back on a very authoritarian rhetoric here, because it's exactly what it is.
It really starts to remind one of George Orwell's 1984. Yes. In the U.S., in the West, they always everybody likes to. I went to school. I read 1984 in school, and the interpretation was that it's obviously about the Soviet Union. But when you look at the West today, when you look at the United States, you find those qualities much more represented in America than in most other countries.
Dima, jump in.
Well, I get scared now every time when I hear the adjective non-governmental. Because it actually means
very abused.
What it means
very
is
abused.
That they take taxpayer money. They're not in any way responsible for the way they spend it. And they spend it, for example, on what they call promotion of democracy in Ukraine, which ends in creating a crudely nationalist regime, which starts another war in Europe. Or, you know, when they say it's non-governmental and then they say It is supported by German Marshall Foundation, and it is supposed to track 600 Twitter accounts that analysts identify as users of Russian propaganda.
But they're not going to tell you who they are.
Yeah.
No, I encourage all of our viewers to take a look at the website, okay? I mean, it looks like it's pretty well designed, but I have really no idea what they're trying to tell us.
Considering the political situation in the U.S. right now, where the opposition, the political elites are blaming Trump for some unsubstantiated relations with Russia.
Yeah,
they must be following Trump's Twitter as part of that.
The main enemy, you know, the main source of Russian propaganda are the past publications of the mainstream American media. Just it's enough to read what they wrote 2 months ago, 1 year ago, to see who is telling the truth and who is lying.
Right.
Let me remind you what they wrote about Iraq having a domino effect, you know, creating the first democracy in the Middle East and then having a domino effect all over the region. But that is big things. But who is now making up Trump's foreign policy team? Condoleezza Rice, who just recently, less than a year ago, said, and it is in the American media, that Donald Trump should not be president. He doesn't have the dignity and stature to be president. End of quote. So the main spreader, if you want, of Russian propaganda, these are the websites of the mainstream newspapers that you should check
20
out.
20 seconds before we go to break.
This is a serious project now. This is heavy hitters backing up. It's Ivory Staff. Is Michael McFaul, former ambassador to Russia, Bill Kristol, arch neocon, Michael Morell, Clinton surrogate and former director of the CIA. This is heavy, and the org is now actually called the Center for Securing Democracy.
Well, we're going to go to a break here, but, you know, that's just everybody feeding at the trough.
You're listening to the CPR News from Community Public Radio, and we are listening to this week's edition of Crosstalk from RT, the Russian television network, hosted by Peter Lavelle, who's a frequent guest here, along with Mark Sloboda and Dmitry Babich, his guests, who are featured here regularly, and analyst Viktor Olyevich.
Viktor, let me go to you. You know, we had the Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev come out and really paint a very dark canvas, if I can use that term, of U.S.-Russia relations. But he's more or less right. I mean, with these sanctions here, an attempted economic war, which, you know, as we all know and our audience probably knows, trade relations between Russia and the United States are really quite limited and almost meaningless now. But it is for the Europeans. I mean, so the worsening of U.S.-Russia relations will also see a worsening of EU-American relations. Will that make the EU reconsider its position?
Well, look, every time a new American administration came into the White House from the beginning of this century, let's start with George Bush Jr., he came in, and the relationship between Moscow and Washington, there were illusions in Moscow, hopes, I would say, that the relationship would improve from the 90s. And in fact, in one of the meetings, summits between Putin and Bush, the American president said, well, he was able to look into Putin's soul and he liked what he saw. What did those two terms, Bush's two terms in the White House, end with? They ended with the abrogation of the anti-ballistic missile treaty by Washington.
One of the pillars of international stability.
It ended with the war in Georgia, where the Georgian regime attacked South Ossetia with a green light from Washington. It would never do that without
one. Attacking UN-approved peacekeepers.
Exactly, and killed dozens of them. What happened next? Next, Obama comes in. Again, there are hopes.
The reset,
yes, and that was even misspelled and said something very different. It was almost alt control delete is what it said. So which is what actually happened. It was a premonition there. And so the reset, and it ends with the 8 years, Obama's 8 years in the White House, and at the lowest
expulsions.
Lowest point in Russian-American relations since the mid-80s. And then Trump wins in November again. There are hopes in Moscow, hoping against hope, that the new administration will be interested in dialogue. In normalization of relations between Moscow and Washington. Now, what do we see? we see, first of all, we see every single branch of power in the U.S., from Congress to the special services to the media and others, making sure, taking every possible action to make sure that this administration is paralyzed,
right.
Paralyzed, and cannot well, make any moves. But I also want to point out that the administration itself, first phone call between Trump and Putin. What does Trump say to Putin? This was January 28th, 8 days after the inauguration. He starts criticizing the START-3 treaty and saying, well, maybe we do not want to prolong it. On February 28th, Mattis says, no, we do not want closer cooperation, and so forth.
But Medvedev said that this is an internal dynamic of American politics.
But it's much more than an internal dynamic.
It's a double whammy. What it is essentially making sure relations don't improve and to take the president down in the process.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, Medvedev, I'm no fan of Prime Minister Medvedev. It pointed out correctly, Medvedev pointed out that Trump has essentially had executive, particularly foreign policy, the primary prerogative of the U.S. presidency, usurped by him, and that he was weak to sign this bill. Now, that being said, he was correct. However, as many Russian liberal opposition pointed out, Medvedev himself is hardly the one to comment about this. He played at being president for 6 years, made several disastrous mistakes when he was actually granted real power, including trying to appease the West by
Libya
by not vetoing the Security Council resolution that the U.S. used to destroy Libya. Yeah, Russia and China both abstained. Several other disastrous mistakes attempting to appease the West. Putin decided he needed to come back. And Medvedev seemingly willingly stepped down and did not run again himself, abrogating to another weakness.
You guys,
of
really important.
Power.
I want to talk about North Korea here.
Mm-hmm. Make a message.
One of the things, and I encourage our viewers to go to RT's YouTube page, and there is the debate on the unanimous voting of new sanctions here. I would like our viewers to compare what the Russian ambassador had to say, the Chinese ambassador, and just about everybody else. Russia and China did vote for it, Dima, but they have a plan to move forward. The West doesn't. That's the big problem.
Well, that's the big problem. And let me remind our viewers that when Medvedev was the president, Russia imposed sanctions on Iran. Russia went along with sanctions against North Korea, and even now Russia is imposing sanctions on North Korea. So,
but like I just said, Victor, the important thing is here is have a plan to move forward. I mean, what I saw from the UK, from the Americans, is that something must be done, something must be done. The usual mantra, they don't know what to do. That's the problem here. The Chinese and the Russians have proposed jointly, how to move forward on North Korea. And that is very important. It's the only two major powers I see pushing diplomacy here, because that's what we need. We do have voices in the United States talking about a preventative war. This is insanity.
Well, look at the way that the trajectory that's going on, that's developing right now. Remember Iraq and what happened with the ever-increasing sanctions regime against Iraq? Year after year, the sanctions would be deepened, increased, widened, with hundreds of thousands, by some estimates, of children and other people losing their lives. And you remember what Madeleine Albright said once about that. And where did it end? It ended, of course, the sanctions, they never bring down any regime. But the Americans finally, after years of sanctions that crippled Iraq's economy, that crippled Iraq's infrastructure, that had killed hundreds of thousands of people, they finally attacked.
They occupied the country. It could not defend itself.
Exactly. Okay. So now we see a similar trajectory developing towards North Korea. Of course, Russia and China, as nations that border North Korea, and that know full well, just as the Americans know, that Pyongyang has no intentions to attack the United States. It has no intentions to attack Texas or Guam or California.
I would also submit here these ICBMs, you know, Mark, a lot of intelligent people are saying these are intermediate range missiles that have a little extra fuel, okay? There's no guidance system on there.
Yeah.
There's no evidence whatsoever they've been able to miniaturize a warhead here. I mean, the language coming out of the Western media, the pliant liberal media, and the establishment in the U.S. is really frightening. We're not even close to this type of situation that they claim. Go ahead.
Yeah, Russia has cast some serious doubts on this, the range of this warhead, of this missile, its ability to deliver a warhead, its ability to withstand reentry. They're most likely years away from anything resembling a real ICBM. But you know, we've been here before. We heard Tony Blair talking about 40 minutes
and the threat,
that's where we are. But Russia and China have both made, I think, a terrible mistake in agreeing to these sanctions. Now, Russia and China both recognize that North Korea is being needlessly provocative here. But they also recognize that they have a very good reason for wanting a strategic deterrent, with the United States massing and conducting constant war games on North Korea's borders. We've been down this path before with Iran, and the U.S. used sanctions against Iran to punish them for years. Russia is now being sanctioned for the third time by the United States, Iran and others.
Agreeing to these sanctions, because China and Russia are on North Korea's borders, they have to be very, very careful.
There is one peaceful solution to the North Korean crisis.
Freeze.
First of all, stop provocative exercises constantly held on North Korea's border
by the United States, and sign a peace agreement, provide
security guarantees. Provide official security guarantees by the United States, by South Korea, that there will be no attack against North Korea. And third of all,
the U.S. will never do that.
Of course.
Never
say never. The U.S., everything, you know, nothing.
I can tell, Victor, you watch this program, because you've said exactly what I've said numerous times.
But the third point is that North Korea already had an agreement on its nuclear program in the 90s.
And who
walked away? It was the Bush Jr. administration that walked away. And of course,
the Clinton walked away from an agreement, and that's when
the North Koreans restarted their program. So where's the solution? The key is to negotiate, and the key is to sign new agreements.
No, there always must be preconditions.
But that is not what the American expansionist power elite is looking for in this case.
1 minute, Dima, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to say that when Victor says there is a negative trajectory, you know, always the beginning of the American president is connected with good hopes, the end with
only in Russia.
Consequences. Not only in Russia. But I think we have an ideological pattern here. We have the United States, which wants to expand its influence. We have Russia, which hopes for goodwill. And President Medvedev, when he was president, he was the main, like, lobbyist of this attitude in Russia. And this attitude simply fails because, and that's why Medvedev was so angry. That's why he used this language, a full-fledged trade war against Russia. Because the last hopes for a compromise are vanishing, you know. Now that the United States is probably going to leave RSMD treaty, you know, there is legislation in the Congress introduced.
But there's no initiative given to Russia to want to have better relations with the United States now. They're just shutting the door.
Right now, we're really in the beginning of a new Cold War. Whether officials on both sides want to say it or not, and Americans have more frequently called Russia adversary than not, we are really in the beginning of a new Cold War, unfortunately.
We've been at the beginning of a new Cold War since 2008.
Probably even earlier.
Yes, we're doing the prehistory of the
Let me say, let me be pessimistic about it. The safe period of Cold War started in 1962 after the Cuban Missile Crisis. We are not yet beyond.
Here we go. We're getting really academic here because we're all smart guys here.
Okay, well, there is a war going on within the Trump administration between McMaster, who is the director of the National Security Agency. He was brought in when Flynn was hounded out and Trump succumbed to pressure. But also, Trump has removed Rince Priebus from the GOP establishment as his chief of staff and brought in Marine Corps General Kelly, who was previously at the Department of Homeland Security. This puts three senior military generals, Mattis's defense secretary, McMaster, and Kelly, with tremendous control of the Trump administration, and you might as well think of them as Trump's deep state minders holding his leash.
But is this a way that Trump basically is ceding to them?
Yeah, absolutely.
His agenda here?
More
he just wants to know the highlights, right?
More and more of Trump's people Trump's loyalists from the campaign onward are being pushed out. And McMaster's has conducted, with Kelly's approval, a purge of the National Security Council. We have a list here from Ezra Cohen Watnick, and the director of NSC Intelligence, Derek Harvey, Middle East director, Rich Higgins, who, however unhinged he is on other things, at least brought to light that Trump is facing a real deep state conspiracy with all these leaks.
What do all these people that have been purged have in common? One thing.
They are all Flynn and Bannon loyalists. Okay. They're associated with either one of those. A lot of them, it's not all bad. A lot of them were neocon, anti-Iran war hawks, right? That's the good side of it. But there is a complex issue. In fact, this Hamilton 68 tried to paint it as if Russian media was trying to get rid of McMaster's. Hashtag fire McMaster's. Not at all.
We're so powerful.
In Russia, they're quite happy to see the anti-Iran war hawks preventing a war in Iran. But there's complications for Trump, because it is also those most willing to go after the leaks that are coming not just from Clinton holdovers, but from Romney loyalists who were brought in by the first tier of cabinet officials.
I want to talk about the leak thing if we have it. What's on your mind, Ben?
With John Kelly being named the new chief of staff. You know, the day James Comey is fired as FBI director by Trump, Kelly calls Comey and tells him that he fully supports him, that he's enraged, outraged by the firing, and offers to resign himself in sympathy. And Comey tells him, no, stay, and everybody understands what that meant. That meant essentially, stay in control.
So he'll be.
And now Kelly has been moved from Homeland Security to Chief of Staff, one of the key positions.
The gatekeeper.
He's going to control who has access. Yeah. Exactly. What does that say? First of all, Mark was just talking about Bannon and his allies in various parts, not just in the NSC, but in
nationalists. Yes.
So I would predict that before the end of the year, Bannon is likely to be to leave the White House.
He was already pushed out of the National Security Council.
He was pushed out of the National Security Council the day before the Tomahawk attack on the Air Force base in Syria, because he had no sympathy for supporting in this way supporting. Well,
but what's interesting here is, I mean, if we're getting all of his loyalists moved away, replaced, and then you have these investigation into him.
We know where it's going.
The thing is that essentially Trump is going to be completely isolated and be left completely alone to fight this tsunami against him. I'm going to be very curious if Jeff Sessions is going to be able to keep his word. Are there going to be arrests? Are there going to be investigations of these leaks here? Because this is what it's death by a thousand slashes.
Exactly.
Okay? And that's what this whole initiative is.
If I could use that word trajectory again, the trajectory for Trump is either impeachment or removal under pressure. And those investigations by Mueller, who has already impaneled two grand juries, which can fish and search for unlimited amounts of time, and he has unlimited resources to pursue Trump, by Congress, by security services that are not loyal to Trump. The end game in this is is Trump's removal from office, and Pence is not playing on his side.
We'll see about that. Tim, go ahead.
Well, I think the lesson from all of this is don't appease the liars. I mean, Trump this week made this statement. The whole Russia thing is a total fabrication. Made up to kind of hide the biggest failure of American politics.
And Mueller moving on from Russian collusion where there's no fire to Trump's finances seems to support that.
Exactly.
Finances, like during the 1990s?
How many times did we hear from Mr. Trump before that there was something? Russia could be there and other countries could be there. It was a total lie. You have to fight a lie head on. And the same story with the European Union. You know, now there are a lot of hopes in the Russian media that the EU could counter the American sanctions because the European companies are going to suffer most. What does the European Union, what do they do this week? They impose additional sanctions on Russia because two Siemens designed turbines, made in Russia, by the way, were delivered to Crimea so that the Crimeans would not suffer from cold and from hunger.
And we'll be back to our regular newscast tomorrow. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.